Mason comes on late and gets his first Brickyard 400 victory. Hi, I'm Doug Rice. I'll be joined by a host of other folks on this post-Brickyard 400 edition of Fast Talk.
It's Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network, presented by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Sunoco. Whether you're headed to the track or just hitting the road, fill up with Sunoco Ultratech. Now here's your host for Fast Talk, Doug Rice.
Welcome to the post-Brickyard 400 edition of Fast Talk. This one's actually being recorded in the Media Center at the famed Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'm Doug Rice. Joining me for the first segment will be Brett McMillan, and throughout the entire show will be Alexis Erickson. And glad to have them along. We're going to have a couple of other media folks drop in and give their thoughts about this edition of the Brickyard 400. Before we talk about the 2024 race and Kyle Larson and a drama-filled event, Alexis, it doesn't seem like it was 30 years ago, and I realize you would have been like seven, when they ran the first Brickyard 400.
She was that old?
Yeah.
I was going to say she hadn't even been born yet.
It's gone by quickly.
I was nine, actually. You guys are giving me a little bit. I like it. I like where you're going with that, but I was nine. No, it's amazing. Honestly, when you think about it, and you know, I took the broadcast in this weekend from back home in North Carolina. So I've been listening to Doug, you and Brett and everybody else on the IMS radio network talk about just how special the Brickyard is and Indianapolis is, and how really when this started 30 years ago, you know, they weren't sure it was going to last more than 1 year. And you know, and here we are 30 years later, obviously coming off of a short stint of running on the road course, now rightfully back on the oval. And I, for one, am so happy that it's that way. I know everybody in the garage area has just been so pleased that we're able to get back on the traditional oval. And I think that it produced a really great results this weekend.
Oh, undoubtedly. Brett McMillan, you got to, in our pre-race show, interview Jeff Gordon. And he reflected on that. He wasn't even sure that this was going to be a long term.
Oh, exactly. He said that. He goes, we're not sure there was going to be a second year. And of course, you know, he won that first race. And remember, he wasn't the Jeff Gordon.
No.
You know, he was a potential great talent at the time. But him winning that, it was the perfect storm. Him winning that, because we've talked about this over the years, this is probably the most provincial track that we go to. People in Indiana, having people from Indiana win here is extra special.
Yes, it is.
And having Jeff Gordon be a kid from Indiana come in here and win that first race just blew everybody out of the water. It made it so special. And, you know, even to this day, for him, it's special. But I'm sitting there looking at Jeff Gordon, and they brought a bunch of the guys that were in that race out. And I'm looking at some of these guys. I didn't even recognize some of them because, of course, we're all 30 years older. But, you know, but Ricky Rudd was here, and you know, Rick Mast was here, and Morgan Shepherd was here. And of course, you know, you see, you know, I kind of laughed. I said to Jeff Burton, I said, you should be out there with all these legends. He goes, heck, I'm working, man. And Dale Jarrett was here. And I kind of laughed with Jeff Gordon before we went on the air. And I said, well, I did say on the air, I said, you know, the funny thing is, in subsequent races, he got to kiss the bricks. But kissing the bricks was not a thing.
That's a Dale Jarrett invention.
They started that. And now the Indy guys do it.
That's funny how a NASCAR tradition has bled over to the Indy 500, and I think it's just fantastic. And Alexis, I'm going to hit on the point you said. It felt right to be up here and the racing in the right direction and back out on that oval. Those 3 years on the road course never felt correct for me.
And you know, they say if you love something, let it go. And when it comes back, it'll be even better. And I think that's what happened. You know, we all got a little, and shame on us, but we all got maybe a little burnout on the oval. It wasn't producing the great racing that we were wanting to see. And there were other circumstances that led to us saying, okay, well, let's try something different. Let's see what happens if we go on the road course. And not to say that the road course didn't deliver some very exciting races and you know, content for us for those few years, but it took that. It took us getting away from the tradition to have us long for it again. And everything that culminated into us coming back on the 30th anniversary, you know, this past weekend at Indianapolis is just, it's tradition personified. And that's what Indy is.
Alexis, is this a crown jewel?
At 1,000%, yes. 1,000%.
You need to be on the oval for this to be a crown jewel. And yes. I think, yeah. I mean, yeah, things, there were a lot of things that happened that conspired to make it not a crown jewel event. That's the incorrect way to say it, but there were, the Goodyear debacle, and there were a lot of things that happened that took a lot of the shine off the race, and the racing wasn't very good. And I have always maintained you don't come here to not run the oval. That's what you don't go to Daytona and only run the road course.
No, you don't.
This is why you come to Indianapolis. If you're a big time racing series, you come here to run the oval.
But there was a chorus of media folks and participants and fans that said, let's run the road course, because they were just done with the oval. And even after the first year of the road course, I vividly remember it. I started hearing people say, well, that didn't feel right. We need to be out there on the oval. That's where the history is here. Yep. That's where AJ Foyt ran. That's where Emerson Fittipaldi competed. All of the greats, the Rick Mears, the AJ Foyts, the Elio Castroneves, they raced on the 2.5 mile oval here. They didn't make their fortunes on the road course. So it's right. It's back in the right place. And without getting into too much detail, I'll start with you, Alexis. I felt like this race had a high entertainment quotient.
Yeah, absolutely it did. I mean, obviously, I think just the anticipation, again, of coming back and running on the oval, the fact that every single contender in the field was excited to do that. We had a fantastic Xfinity Series race that led into the race for the Cup Series that just amped up the excitement going into Cup race day. And to be honest, I think that it delivered.
I thought that the strategies were all over the place, and yet it wasn't. It was kind of like at Sonoma this year. Sometimes when strategies are at play, and we've seen this at Richmond, it makes for a boring race because they're hard to follow. But I thought it happened at Sonoma this year, and it happened again today. I thought that the strategies, they were easy to follow, and yet it made for an entertaining race. And I thought that the racing was very good. It was it the best racing we've had this year? Probably not. But I mean, I think it was a step up. I think this new car delivered what we thought it was going to be able to do. Guys were able to pass.
I was expecting a Pocono type race, which was all strategy. I mean, it turned out it was kind of dramatic at the end. But Alexis, we got so much more than that. And frankly, I was relieved that we saw a more compelling race than I thought what we had the week before.
Yeah, I mean, when you just look at, the fact that Kyle Larson, I think, if I have this written down right, I think he restarted 23rd after his last pit stop and drove up through the field to eventually win the race. I mean, that shows you can pass cars. And, that has been the biggest thing. Well, we can't pass. We got to rely on strategy to get track position. And there was some of that. There was a lot of that just because of this being a 2.5 mile race track and all of that. But there was still passing. There was compelling racing and battling all throughout the field. And if you listen to our broadcast and the amount of work that our turn announcers put in, you know that.
There was a lot of drama. We'll talk about this 28th running of the Brickyard on the 30th anniversary. If that's a little confusing, we'll explain that coming up next here on Fast Talk.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR. From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
Whether your engine runs daily or only when you need it, Z-Max Micro Lubricant is the force you need against carbon buildup that can damage your engine. Combustion causes carbon and other harmful deposits to build up on your engine, fuel system, and transmission. And carbon is like sandpaper rubbing against your engine's internal parts. You don't want that. You want Z-Max Micro Lubricant. It soaks into metal and keeps your vehicle running at peak performance. Find out more at zmax.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter. Protect your engine to the max with Z-Max.
I'm Denny Hamlin, and you're listening to Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
Here's Christopher Bell.
My Toyota Camry TRD race car isn't cheap to build and prepare. I have a pit crew that maintains and fixes my equipment. I have a spotter high above the track watching my back, talking me through turns and potential dangers on the track. I physically train to handle the stress of driving. And I have software helping my crew chief and engineers make the right strategy calls. And with all this, I never take my eyes off the road, and neither should you. One distraction can change everything in one instant.
Hey, Jeff Gordon standing out here talking to Rico Abreu. Man, 30th anniversary of this race. Could you imagine standing here 30 years later celebrating this?
You know, that first one, I don't know if anybody, any of us that were a part of that day thought it was going to go any further than 1 year. So we just all soaked it in. It was so special. And just seeing the fan support, media support, you know, the competitors, just everybody was excited. It's great to see that it's lived on 30 years later. And I think Doug Bowles and the whole staff here at Indianapolis Motor Speedway has just knocked it out of the park for this anniversary, bringing a bunch of old drivers like myself back and filling the grandstands up, which is amazing. I hope it's a great race as well.
All right, they didn't kiss the bricks at that time. That's a Dale Jarrett tradition started, so Jeff might enjoy doing that today on the 30th anniversary.
So good to hear from Jeff Gordon there, the first winner ever 30 years ago at the Brickyard 400. He would go on to win it a total of four or five times. And his car owner, Rick Hendrick, the winner of the first ever Brickyard 400, has won this race a total of 11 times. We did some quick math. Jimmy Johnson has won it four. Jeff Gordon won it five times. That's kind of obscene, by the way. Casey Kane got them a win up here also. And now today with Kyle Larson, that's a lot out of 28 runnings, the Brickyard 400. He's got well over a third of them.
And he got, so Jeff Gordon was kissing the bricks today because it's, you know, the kind of the man, almost what's his title, managing partner or whatever.
He's soon to be the big dog there at Hendrick.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned big dog, because Roger Penske was here in the media center yesterday and talking about Hendrick coming up here and absolutely dominating. Because Penske has one win in the Brickyard 400 and at the place he owns, and he goes, yeah, Hendrick's the big dog here.
And so that's a nice story. Yeah. And Alexis, I don't know, for whatever reason, if I had Kyle Larson on my short list to win here, because I'm not very smart, I thought it might be a Toyota race. But at the end, and Kyle Larson raced up to the front, by the way.
You know, it's funny. Well, first of all, you are very smart, Doug. So let me just put that out there. but, you know, I don't know that I did either, which, you know, kind of shame on us, because when you think about Kyle Larson and all the hype that he gets and everything else, he should probably always be on the short list. But also because of the fact that he has this year more laps on Indianapolis Motor Speedway than anybody else because of what he did in the Indy 500 in May. And so, you know, obviously the storyline of what happened at Indy with the rain and then not being able to compete in the Coca-Cola 600 because of the rain here and the shortened event. They were able to bring back the original paint scheme, the McLaren papaya color paint scheme that they were going to run in the Coca-Cola 600 and win with it today. And you know what? I think Kyle Larson is always a threat to win. Obviously, he kind of had a leg up on the competition, in my opinion, because of what he was able to do earlier in the year. But I'll agree with you in that I was kind of thinking it might even be a Ford race today. I was thinking Ryan Blaney because of what he was able to accomplish at Pocono last weekend. And he was in the fold all the way up until the end.
I felt like we got cheated a bit, guys, with the late yellow that cost the first overtime. Because we had three people running up front in Brad Keselowski and Ryan Blaney and, of course, the eventual winner, Kyle Larson, that were putting on a show. We had three cars running for the lead, separated by a half second, Brett.
And you weren't sure if like Reddick was going to be able to get by Kyle Larson or whatever. You know, you weren't sure if they were going to be able to make that move to get to the front or if Keselowski was going to be able to hold him off. And you're right. I mean, it was riveting to watch. And boy, how huge would that have been for Keselowski, for RFK Racing, to win the Brickyard?
There was part of me thinking that maybe is the best story. That's better as a story than Larson or Blaney winning, because here's a guy that put everything on the line and maybe capture one of the big prizes. Didn't come to be, but he does have a win this year at Darlington already, so he's got to be settled. Alexis, there was a lot of contention from Ryan Blaney, even when we interviewed him in post-race, about what happened when Brad Keselowski ran out of gas, who was the race leader, and he peeled off, and that was a huge advantage for Kyle Larson.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously on that restart, you had Brad Keselowski, who was the control car. He was the leader at the time. Ryan Blaney was on the outside, and on the inside behind Keselowski was Kyle Larson. Well, when Keselowski ran out of gas, he pulls off of the track. Larson assumes the position, and then he also becomes the control car at the start of, when the restart flag waves. And so Ryan Blaney, very upset, in very Ryan Blaney fashion, by the way. You know, if you guys want to hear some not safe for work conversations, tune in Ryan Blaney during any NASCAR Cup Series weekend. But he was very upset about the fact that Larson was able to assume the position of the control car. He was the third place car. Keselowski pulls off. Blaney was under the assumption that the second place car himself should then assume the lead of the control car. And that's not how it worked. Larson was able to basically control the restart, get away. And that's where he stayed for the rest of the race until he ended up in victory lane. So, yeah, Blaney was not happy about that. I was talking to you guys about it in the break, and it is the rule, but I don't know that it should be.
Well, the line moves up.
Yeah.
Because you can't. You can't shift everybody a position. So by him being the leader, by Keselowski leading the race, he dives onto pit road, then that line moves up. That inside line moves up, and that put Ryan Blaney or put Kyle Larson in the catbird seat.
But
I don't know that there's much else you could do.
But
if you'd run out on the backstretch, maybe NASCAR has the option to say something like, hey, he's out, Blaney, you can be to make a quick call like that. But he ran out after the pace car had already pulled off, and then he pulls off. You either have to wave off the restart or just let it go.
And I'm not defending NASCAR here, but that's a one in a million kind of fluky situation.
Yeah.
You don't see that. We could go 10 more seasons and never see that kind of scenario play out. We got to take a break. Brett, thank you for sticking around. Great job working on the IMS radio broadcast today on Pit Road. You and I have been to a lot of these, and it never gets old coming up here.
No, it's always a pleasure. You walk in this place, you just feel the history. It's a special place.
We'll keep talking about the Brickyard 400 after this time out here on Fast Talk.
How would you like to get high-speed internet for your home for less than $2 a day? That's right, for about $50 a month, you'll get lightning fast internet. Are you paying less than $50 a month right now for your internet? Then call Whole Home Connect right now for blazing fast internet at $50 a month with no price increases, no hidden fees, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. It's a great deal. And guess what? You can try it for 15 days. If you don't like it, you get your money back. But you're gonna love it, and you're gonna love the price. Internet for your home for $50 a month. That's less than $2 a day. Plus, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees, and our 15-day guarantee. Call now. 800-748-0593. 800-748-0593. 800-748-0593. That's 800-748-0593.
I'm Alex Bowman, and you're listening to Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network.
It's Kathy Martindale and Paul Shadd on Racing Country.
Hi, I'm Christopher Bell, and this is the fastest 2 hours on the radio, Racing Country. myself, I still have a lot to prove to compete at the level that I want to compete at. We have more to accomplish in the sport, and we want to do better than what we've done the last 2 years. Raising country.
The grassroots is where the hometown heroes of Friday and Saturday nights are and where the future stars of NASCAR are made.
First career win for James Friesen of the TAS Racing Sportsman Series.
PRN's At the Track is a people show about the people of grassroots racing. The stories and journeys from the grassroots are always unique. PRN's At the Track covers the people of America's fattest bull race. Hear PRN's At the Track each week on broadcast radio stations, the free PRN app, or at goprn.com.
Welcome back to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where we are recording this version of Fast Talk immediately after the running of the 28th Brickyard 400. I'm Doug Rice. Back in our control center in Concord, North Carolina, at Charlotte Motor Speedway for PRN, is Alexis Erickson. And I'm happy to welcome in from the NASCAR Wire Service, longtime friend of the network and good friend of mine, Holly Kane. Holly, how do you rate overall 25,000-foot view of today's Brickyard 400?
Well, it certainly had a dramatic ending, and I don't think you could ask for more than that. That's what you want, right? I thought the race kind of had an ebb and flow, and the different pit stop strategies determined a lot. So I was really glad that the drama picked up, so to speak, at the end.
And we had real racing. Kyle Larson did not win this race because of some great call that his crew chief made. He raced up and passed a boatload of cars to get in position.
He really did. And it was fantastic to watch. I have to say, watching him pick them off one after another, and some laps he'd take two cars.
And Holly, you may articulate this better than all three of us earlier. And it will be a controversial part of them to allow Kyle Larson to become the control car after Brad Keselowski came on pit road.
Well, yes, that's going to be spoken about. And obviously, if you watched Ryan Blaney after the race or heard his interview, he was very disappointed and perhaps some confusion about it. But it did go down as the rules state it was supposed to do. And Kyle went through, and I don't think Ryan was expecting it. He said he wasn't, and therefore he did not react immediately. But he got he had another shot. So as you said, the racing itself was what won Kyle the race.
Alexis, I'm thinking about the kind of poetic justice this is for Kyle Larson. He got to run that special paint scheme that he was supposed to run at Charlotte that he never got to run. Then he finally comes up here to Indy and makes that payout. I like the symmetry there.
I mean, it really is a great story when you think about it. He captivated audiences in May, all across the motorsport spectrum, from what he was able to do at Indy for weeks there in that car. And then to not be able to pay it off and run the Coca-Cola 600 because of the weather, something that you can't, help. It just happened that way. I think this was kind of redemption for that and that team, because I know how disappointed he was when he wasn't able to pull off the true double. He's talked about it several times, and this doesn't give that back to him, but it certainly gives a little bit of redemption.
And I know you'll be doing the Toyota performance report a little bit later on in the show for both of you. And Holly, I'll toss to you. They didn't win, but this was a really good day for 23-11. Tyler Reddick, second, fifth place for Bubba Wallace.
Exactly. And it puts Bubba only 7 points from the playoff cutoff line. So it was a very big day for him. He collected a lot of points in winning that second stage.
This has been a good track for Bubba, Alexis. This is his fifth race and he's collected 4 top 10s.
Yeah. And I think that was his first stage win of the season, I believe, when he was able. Since 2022. Yeah. I mean, that's huge. And at a time when is really clutch and, needing to gain points, to be able to come away and do that. And also to do it, before we go into this hiatus for the Olympic break, just give that team, some good momentum to kind of go into the break with and hopefully come out even stronger on the other end.
I'll start with Holly with the question for both of you now, because I think we can genuinely start looking at this. Do we have a prohibited favorite now for the championship?
Well, I think it's hard not to say that Kyle Larson is that. He's won on different kinds of tracks. His motivation is always very high, as is everyone's.
Right.
But I think the way he is running right now, he would have to be the favorite going into the break.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that, especially when you look at the fact that he has the most wins. He sits atop the playoff standings right now. He's 28 playoff points. So that's going to get him, a deep, deep run, even if he has a little bit of misstep in the beginning stages of the playoffs. I think for a while there, we thought that it was going to be Denny Hamlin. He has had some tough weeks over the past month and a half. He's had a couple good ones. We'll see if he can get back in the rhythm once we get back off this Olympic break. And Ryan Blaney is coming on strong at this point. But if I had to pick somebody right now, it would most likely be Kyle Larson, just because of the position he's sitting in right now.
Well, you're right. And the thing about Denny, at a certain point in the race today, he was leading the points. And now he's, I believe it's 45 points back in fourth place. So this was a big swing for him when he had the accident late in the race today.
And I do feel like, I'll ask myself this question. I think Larson is the favorite just because of critical mass. He's won a title before, but I'm going to agree with Alexis too. The other guy that now owns the title, Ryan Blaney, I'm going to give those two the edge. I can't tell you who third and fourth are on my scale, looking with four races to go in the regular season.
And the racetracks that are coming up that are going to decide it, you know, you still have Daytona International Speedway. And let's be honest, those tracks are not Kyle Larson's best. So that presents a huge opportunity for Denny Hamlin to do something. And Ryan Blaney is great on the what we used to call restrictor plate tracks, too.
Tracks, the artist formerly known as the restrictor plate track. I'm a little disappointed, though, that Daytona got moved out of that spot at the end of the regular season, Alexis. I just felt like that was the perfect place that somebody could come on. We could have a wild card win and grab the last spot. And there was so much tension. And to go to Darlington, I mean, nothing against Darlington and the Southern 500, but I just felt like that was perfection before.
I think you're right. And the reason why is because it could produce that that game seven moment, that miracle where, you know, a small team could go and race their way in at the very last minute to the playoffs because they can win and get in, you know, what is. And we talk about it all the time. All of these races, because of the way that the Cup Series unfolds, I think can be considered wild cards. But your biggest wild card you're ever going to go to is you know, the Super Speedway races. And that had the opportunity to present itself as something where a small team could get in on a Cinderella story at the last minute. So that was always kind of fun to think about. But you know what? I like Darlington, too. I like Darlington as you know, the last race. And I think it can produce, you know, a spectacular event too. So even though Daytona was kind of perfect in that spot, I'm not upset about Darlington being there.
We had Doug Bowles on our broadcast for a bit today. He's the president of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And he actually threw out an attendance number, which most people don't do anymore. And he said, we've pre-sold 70,000 tickets, the biggest crowd they've had here since 2017. I know 70,000 here at Holly, you've been to, what, how many Indy 500s have you been to here?
I believe 32.
That's pretty impressive. That's a lot of miles. I think that's probably circling the circumference of the earth in mileage. But 35 Daytona Indy 500s preps you for a lot of impressions here. But it felt a little more electric here than the last few times the stock cars have been here.
Well, it seemed like the fans that are here were very very, very excited. And also, you know, looking in the corners where you have so much action, the stands were absolutely packed. I got a sense, you could tell that there were not only more people, but more enthusiastic. It felt like a more enthusiastic crowd.
Yeah, it's nice to quantify it that way. And here's the thing, 70,000 people in here doesn't look like a lot. And Doug Bowles also pointed out, he said, when you see the drone shot, keep in mind that a lot of our fans get up under the awnings and they're in the shade. He goes, shade sells tickets here. I'd never heard it that put that way before, and I thought that was really insightful. And Alexis, we talk about this each week. I think NASCAR's in a pretty good spot. By the way, 70,000 fans, probably second or third biggest crowd to watch a stock car race this year. In Daytona would be number one. 70,000 here, maybe the sellout at Coca-Cola 600 would be a fight for two and three, but I just feel like we're trending in the right direction in so many ways.
Yeah, we certainly are. I mean, and obviously, you know, the hype of coming back and running the Oval, I think, is really what helped to propel that. And hopefully the racing that we experienced this weekend will continue that tradition as we go on, you know, hopefully continuing to run the Oval. We haven't seen that schedule yet, but I'm pretty confident that that's going to happen. And, you know, it's funny, you talked about shade selling tickets. I am of fair skin. I am what I call a shade seeker. And so I definitely can relate to the shady part selling tickets. But yeah, I mean, huge crowd today. Perspective, you certainly have to have perspective on, you know, how many that stadium, that racetrack holds when it's completely full. But 70,000 is a massive crowd in today's standards.
In today's sports world, and that's as many fans as you're going to have at any NFL football game. And I know sometimes I think we get transfixed. I'll be curious to see what happens to the TV ratings, because right as the race got started, the word came out that Joe Biden is not going to seek the nomination for the Democratic Party. And so they had to move the race around from big time NBC to USA. I think maybe at the end it went
back on. They did it again.
NBC.
Yeah, because the nightly news came on and, you know, it superseded
I get it. That's a pretty big story that probably, I was going to say Trump's the, the Brickyard 400, but that's a bad choice of
you
words.
You did say it.
I did say you it. Did say I, it. I thought it, but I thought it legitimately. And then I thought, well, I'm really clever. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We will have the Toyota Performance Report. We will run some highlights of the Brickyard 400. Holly Kane, NASCAR Wire Service, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for dropping by.
It is an honor to be on here, and especially with you two. Thank you, Doug.
All right, there goes Holly, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Can you handle the smoke? Then Toyota Racing wants you. Not the kind of smoke wafting from the grill on race days. Smells good. Kind of smoke from victory donuts, drifting less than a hair's width from walls and blasting off to the tune of 300 miles per hour plus. If the smoke smells inviting, we're looking for you. Be part of the action at toyota.com/racing. Toyota, let's go places.
For NASCAR fans just tuning in, I'm Kyle Petty here with Echo Park, the official used car of Speedway Motorsports. This season will be the most exciting one yet with the introduction of Echo Park's Coffee Cup Series, a pre-race event where race fans can grab coffee, ask me questions, and check out the great cars of Echo Park. And this just in, fans will be entered for the chance to win a VIP ticket upgrade and ride in the pace car. Echo Park, every car, happy owner.
I'm Bubba Wallace, and you're listening to Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network.
It's hard to believe in this day and age in the United States of America that children are hungry.
Our time on this planet is short. We have to give back to those in need.
Every child has a chance, no matter what obstacles they may encounter.
Never have we been taxed more as a society to help kids the way we are right now.
Speedway Children's Charities raises money through several different avenues. My favorite is the gala.
It's one of those can't-miss events for everybody who attends. And I've been able to raise and distribute over $60 million.
When you have 50 different organizations receiving grants from Speedway Children's Charities, that's far-reaching. And some people think, well, I don't have much money to give. I say $50 is a lot to give.
At Speedway Children's Charities,
our mission is simple. Help every child we can.
Because all children
deserve joy.
And hope.
And love.
And if one child is still in need,
then there's still work to do.
Welcome back to Fast Talk. Alexis Erickson here on this post-Indy edition of Fast Talk. We want to get into the Toyota Performance Report that saw, as we mentioned in the earlier segment, 2311 have a really good day. Tyler Reddick was your second place finisher. Christopher Bell came home fourth. Bubba Wallace was fifth. Ty Gibbs, 23rd, Martin Truex Jr., 27th, Eric Jones and John Hunter Nemechek, 28th and 29th. They didn't have a great day. Denny Hamlin had a late race spin that regulated him to 32nd, and Jimmy Johnson, 33rd, also collected in a late race incident. That is your Toyota Performance Report brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Indy Race is always a collaboration between the Performance Racing Network and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Racing Network, and this is how it sounded.
Drivers, start your engines!
The green flag is now in the air, and we're underway at the Brickyard. To the inside, it's Tyler Reddick. Glued to his outside, headed to one is Denny Hamlin.
Chris Buescher has lost a tire. It looks like he is off the pace, smoke trailing the back of a playoff bubble driver. There's more smoke at turn number four. Not sure if it's going to bring out a yellow, but a big development for a playoff driver.
Kyle Larson starts to look to the inside, trying to make that pass.
Larson peeks to the inside. Hamlin blocks him. Larson looks outside. Hamlin keeps it at bay. They're one car length apart in this final lap of the stage.
Battling down the front stretch for a stage one victory. They get to the yard of bricks. It goes to Denny Hamlin. Two car lengths back in second was going to be Kyle Larson. Ryan Blaney takes third.
It's going to be Kyle Busch taking the race lead. He'll lead the pack out of turn number one on this latest restart.
Trouble. We have trouble down that back straightaway. Two cars in the outside retaining wall. William Byron, too much smoke to tell who the other driver is. It's A.J. Allmendinger. Both of those cars will come to a rest midway point of the back straightaway.
And there's heavy damage here for another vehicle as well. The 21 of Harrison Burton also involved in that as he passes me. The right front tire not turning on that 21 machine in turn three.
This will be the first stage win for the driver of the number 23 Toyota in 2024. Bubba Wallace headed toward the yard of bricks. He will win stage number two. He'll be followed by Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney in fourth. John Hunter Nemechek will finish stage two in fifth.
We got a crash. Joey Logano has hit the wall here in turn number one, as has the seven-time champion and four-time Brickyard winner, Jimmy Johnson. I'm not sure Johnson has much damage to that Carvana machine, but Joey Logano's Pennzoil Ford is absolutely used up.
Three NASCAR champions battling for a win here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Keselowski, Blaney, and Larson all tied together back into one.
Bubble in front of me, turn number three. A car, heavy smoke, up into the wall here. It's tough for me to see. It is Kyle Busch. Yet another misfortune for driver number eight as he slams the wall and his hopes of winning his third Brickyard 400 appear done.
Keselowski has to dive to pit road. Kyle Larson gets to move up to the front row. He'll restart on the inside of Ryan Blaney.
Oh, we got a big crash. It looks like John Hunter Nemechek, Denny Hamlin, Daniel Hemric, Alex Bowman. It was Nemechek who got clipped. He hammered the inside wall, came back across the racetrack and wiped out four or five cars. A big mess down here in turn number one.
They hit the restart zone. Kyle Larson jumps early. Ryan Blaney tries to match him. Larson able to pull away from Tyler Reddick, side by side for the lead into one.
Racing back down here to the yard of bricks. It's Kyle Larson by six car lengths over Tyler Reddick.
It was Ryan Preece, the car that crashed, but the white flag is out. Kyle Larson's advantage over Tyler Reddick. Four car lengths out of turn one for the final time.
Ryan Preece is stuck on the inside of the back straightaway. His car has come to a rest, and we will throw a caution, and that will mean Kyle Larson potentially will win this Brickyard 400.
And that is going to do it. The next flag wins the race. Kyle Larson took the white flag as the race leader. Kyle Larson will win the Brickyard 400 at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Tyler Reddick drives up beside him to congratulate the race winner. Ryan Blaney, who actually stumbled on the restart.
Hey, airline travelers. Let's say you have a problem and you need to change or cancel an existing airline reservation. What do you do? Well, SkyWatch is a free service that can help anyone with any airline reservation fix it. Whether you want to cancel it, change your dates, or add passengers, we can help fix your airline reservations so you get exactly what you need. We've updated our computer database and now have access to every airline around the globe. So now you can make one phone call, regardless of who booked your airline tickets, and we'll change it, cancel it, and fix it for you. We know the insider secrets to fixing reservations that the airlines don't want you to know about. So if you need to cancel, change, or modify an existing airline reservation, call SkyWatch right now. It's a free call, so let us fix it for you. 800-397-6805. 800-397-6805. 800-397-6805. That's 800-397-6805.
I'm Eric Almirola, and you're listening to Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network.
We saw a lot of chaos in the closing laps of the race, so just trying to minimize that, make it more about a race than people just using each other up.
I think it's needed. It was needed at all the road courses.
While I don't think it's going to be a home run, I think that it'll be in the right direction.
So many opportunities to either be really good or make mistakes, and they can start adding up on you quick.
For the latest NASCAR news without a restrictor plate, it's PRN's Garage Pass. For the station near you, check us out at goprn.com.
Hi, this is PRN's David Stiles. Join me each week when I head over to JC's Garage to talk NASCAR.
As of right now, if I were to name my top five, I could tell you Chase Elliott wouldn't be in that top five with this next-gen car. He has a lot to prove on the road courses with this next-gen car, but I still don't think there's a real out-front leader. I think Tyler Reddick has been outstanding.
That's JC's Garage, wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Fast Talk. Thanks a lot for Holly Kane for stopping by, and also Brett McMillan, Doug Rice, along with Alexis Erickson. Alexis, since it's the 30th anniversary, a little reflection time. Some of this personal and some of it just about this event. It came on the scene blockbusters. We did the first three or four races up here with 200,000 people in attendance, and the right two people won those first two. Jeff Gordon, the Indiana boy, who was just a boy. That was just his third win when he won here at the Brickyard. And then next year you come back and it's the legendary Dale Earnhardt that got the win, who chimed in and said, well, I'm the first man to win this race after a boy won it last year. And Earnhardt's the guy that could get away with saying that.
He had a way with words, didn't he? I mean, when you think about the heritage of this race and what it has meant to stock car racing, and you think about how it began, a lot of it are those origins that you're talking about.
And I felt like when we first came up here, there was a resentment from some of the Indy people for stock cars being here. It was like, how dare you hillbillies come up here? It was like the Visigoths storming the gates of Rome. And it took a little while, and there was a culture clash. Indy has their own credential system. They have the famed yellow shirts, who are the security and traffic people that direct you where to go. And they control everything inside the grounds. And for the first couple of years, there was a little bit of a clash. They didn't even recognize the NASCAR Universal credential.
Yeah, that's interesting. I certainly did not think that. I don't have any personal experience from those first few years, but that makes sense to me. I mean, obviously you have all this history and all this lore and everything that's around open wheel racing. And then you have this other up and coming. I mean, at the time NASCAR was on a rocket straight up.
Yes, it was.
And so, you know, not only were they coming into the house of open wheel racing, but they were also stealing the spotlight in a lot of other ways. And so
go ahead.
I was just going to say, so I can see how that could cause some animosity.
And that was at a time too, when NASCAR got here, that open wheel was frankly struggling. They'd gone through the split of the series, CART was gone. And it was the IndyCar situation. It was not good. NASCAR helped this place for a long time. Then it fell off after, as Brett alluded to, the tire debacle when they ran the race up here and the tires were only good for 10 laps and you had to stop. And that was dreadful. I was here broadcasting that race, and that was really hard. Personal reflections, myself and our chief engineer, Harold Hamrick, were up here for that first race. We did a show from a now defunct place in downtown Indiana called Union Square, which was literally an old train station that had turned into a mall. And we did the shows there, and we just came over here and were basically spectators for the race. But I remember that. And that was back when they showed the race that night in Indianapolis because it was always blacked out on television, which is hard to believe now. That's kind of foreign thinking. And I worked my first Brickyard as a pit reporter for for IMS Radio in 97. I think Mike Joy was the anchor, and Mike anchored it for about 3 years, and then he left to go television. Thank you, TV, for hiring Mike Joy away. And I got to go up in the booth and did a bunch of races here, Alexis, with just John Andretti in the booth with me. It was John and I in the booth with no other announcers. And those were some long races when two people, and you could, here's a little back behind the stories. We used to broadcast from the ninth floor of the Pagoda. There's like 150 people up there. There's one bathroom, one. And I would have like 2 minutes and 10 seconds to go to that bathroom, which was not close, and then get back. And I would go over there and it would be a line 10 people long. And finally, I'd just tap somebody on the shoulder. I have 2 minutes. You know, if you don't have that urgency, I need to go in here. But this has developed into a big place and big part of my career.
Well, you talked a little bit about how Indy does things differently, right? And a lot of people know, just because of us explaining it, or, you know, over the years it being a co-production between IMS Radio, the Performance Racing Network, but because they have their own radio network, we have created this collaboration that has really grown into a family. With IMS guys now coming and doing our broadcast, and you hear, Nick Yeoman and Mark Janes and other voices from their radio network. Yeah, exactly. On our broadcast, and really has created this great relationship between these two networks. Can you just talk a little bit about like how that evolution has happened?
It's been fantastic. There's a lot of PRN people that have done at least a couple of races here. Rob Albright did some. Mark Garrow worked a couple. Chuck Carlin, that used to be here, worked some. There's been several of us. Brett McMillan, Brad Gilley, and myself have worked the vast majority of the Brickyard 400s. But it's so neat to take two different disciplines, open wheel racing, which obviously IndyCar Radio does, and NASCAR stock car racing, and combine the radio teams. But you've seen it. You've been up here for a bunch of them, Alexis. It works flawless. They welcome us here. We love being up here. And I feel like, for me personally, these are some of the most intriguing and fun broadcasts I get to do all year long. Part of it is because it's very fresh.
And it was the catalyst, that relationship that you have cultivated over the years between IMS Radio and PRN was the catalyst, for lack of a better term, for you to get to do what you have now called really the highlight of your entire professional, motorsports career. So talk a little bit about being able to do the Doug Double and how that relationship led to the possibility of that even happening.
Well, I had wanted to do that, and a pretty high up person in the Shell Oil organization had heard me say I would love to do both races on one day, Heidi Massey Bong, and she made that happen and got Shell to sponsor it, and they flew us up here, and you came with me to kind of chronicle that weekend, and it was marvelous. We were up here for 3 days, and I went down and worked on pit road, called some Elio Castroneves pit stops, and then they said, well, go down to the end of pit road and put yourself in Juan Pablo's stall, because I didn't want to take a pit stall from one of the regular folks, and I said, good. And it turns out Juan Pablo won the thing. And then you and I ran and hopped on a plane and went to Charlotte, and we landed at the Concord Airport. They helicoptered us over to the Speedway, and we went and watched Carl Edwards win that year's Coca-Cola 600. And it's the most indelible day that I've ever spent. And to this day, I'm really kind of happy to say I'm the only broadcaster that's worked at both locations on the same day.
Well, I'm definitely, happy and honored that I was able to share that day with you. It was such a whirlwind weekend, let alone just the day itself. But it's safe to say that obviously without the support of Pennzoil and Heidi and everybody on their team, it would have never happened. But also, if we didn't have that, if you hadn't cultivated that relationship with IMS, I don't know it would have been, as easy and as seamless. It really was, from an on-air broadcast standpoint, seamless integration.
It just happened. I mean, I had worked with all these people before, a lot of them, on the Brickyard 400 broadcast. So it wasn't a stretch of working to meet these folks, but we already knew them. So that was really good. And there's just been a special bond between PRN and the IMS radio people for a long, long time. And we're very good friends off the track. We go out to eat together when we hang out up here and spend a lot of time together. And that's even in our management group. So it's been really special. The first event, I was trying to think of this the other day. I worked probably 50 IndyCar races back when it was the IRL, the Indy Racing League, went all over the country with Mark James was a big part of that. I think he might be the only person still here that was on those broadcasts. But I worked a lot of open wheel races, and that was part of that whole blending. But that was all after I became part of the crew on the Brickyard weekend. The first thing I ever did for them is their old director, Chico Fernandez, and a gentleman named John Royer. John Royer is the originator of my transportation story that I tell to our crew all the time. Asked me to come and do PA at the Disney track.
Oh, yeah. I've been there. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There was a track at Disney. There was an oval, and the trucks were running there on the Saturday before the IndyCar races were. And they said, can you come down and do the PA for the trucks? I said, sure. I didn't know anything about the trucks, but I wasn't going to turn down the request. I did some study, and, you know, they didn't know if I was doing a good job or not because, you know, they trusted me on that. And then after that, I got one invitation after another, worked an IndyCar race at Charlotte in the turns. And since then, we've all been really tight, and they're just a great crew. And I've said this before, Alexis, I wish more people could hear them do their thing than just on May for the Indy 500. Such talented broadcasters, but a lot of the IndyCar races don't get that much pub, and it's not that big a coverage. But man, when these guys get to do their thing, they're really good.
Well, you know, we talk a little bit about this past weekend and what transpired, you know, at Indy and the Xfinity race. You know, the last few laps of that race on the IMS radio network that you guys called has kind of gone viral because it was such a dramatic finish to that race with the three cars of Riley Herbst, Cole Custer, and Eric Almirola going for the win. But the way that you and the other folks at IMS kind of brought that to life, I mean, it was just, it gave me goosebumps to listen to.
And if you're interested, go to my Twitter account at Riceman61 because I reposted it. Nick Yeoman, that works for IMS Radio, took the TV video and married it to our call for about the last lap and a half. That's as good of racing as I have ever seen anywhere. We had three different leaders in the last lap and a half of that race. Cole Custer went to the front. Then it looked like Eric Almirola was going to steal it. And then the singular best moment I have ever seen for Riley Herbst changed my mind about him. He dove under Almirola on the exit of four and won the drag race back to the Yard of Bricks. And good on him. And I feel like maybe we got the best story.
Absolutely.
Out of those three guys that were racing?
Absolutely did. Yeah, absolutely did. Yeah, he
and
earned
congratulations
it.
To Cole Custer. He's going to go cup racing next year.
Yeah, we heard that little silly season nugget this weekend at IMS, too. Yeah, he's going to go run cups for the Haas factory team, that one charter that they're keeping left over from the Stuart Haas.
And I am really glad I've gotten to know Cole better. He's worked two races with us this year on the cup side as an analyst. He won't be available on Sundays.
He's
next
a
year.
Fantastic analyst too. Maybe and, we and can he get him on Saturdays potentially, but
yeah, maybe so. Maybe so, but he's really good at that. And I will say this. Well, I'll save that comment for later. We got to take a break. We'll come back and put the final brush strokes on this edition of Fast Talk.
Fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market. Performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR. From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
We work hard to keep our cars looking great on the outside, but engine components need our attention too. That's where you can trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant to disperse carbon buildup in your engine fuel system to keep your car or truck running at its peak. By soaking into the metal of your engine, Z-Max Micro Lubricant improves performance, extends engine life, and reduces emissions. Trust the many customers who've said, "Thanks for saving my engine." Find out more at ZMAX.com or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
I'm Ty Dillon, and you're listening to Fast Talk on the Performance Racing Network.
On the inside, Byron in the middle, Chastain up high.
Hamlin now beginning to come to the front. He's got the edge now. He'll take the lead away.
Brian Blaney sliding down into the grass. There was a lot of bumping and grinding, and Blaney noses into the infield retaining wall.
Ross Chastain doing a great job. Truex right there, big in his mirror as they race down the backstretch here. Harrison Burton is spinning down the back straightaway. Everybody going to the top side. Here comes Kyle Larson. Larson dives to the bottom of the racetrack. He wants to lead all four.
Chris Buescher has it. And a spin off of turn four.
Yeah, we've got a ton of cars that are in this one, and Larson is certainly one of those cars.
Trouble coming out of turn four. Hamlin is sideways. The car spins down on the apron of the racetrack.
Byron takes that brightly painted number 24 to the front. He gets a big shove from Daniel Suarez.
This is PRN.
Welcome back to Fast Talk here as we put the wraps on this, celebrating Kyle Larson's victory in the Brickyard 400 and the 11th win for his team owner, Rick Hendrick, of this very prestigious race. And a dramatic race, very entertaining all the way down to the end. This will be my last Brickyard 400 broadcast, and it was a heck of a race to witness here for my final time coming up here as a broadcaster at Indianapolis.
And a special part of that broadcast too, the president of IMS Speedway came in, Doug Bowles, and presented you with something pretty nice.
He gave me, I've gotten so many cool gifts this year. I'm not sure that I'm worthy of any of these things, but I'll gladly take them if people want to give them to me. He gave me a 115-year-old brick. It is one of the original bricks from when this race course was all brick, ergo the Brickyard. The entire track was a brick surface, and then, they took it up and paved it. But somebody wisely stashed away some of the bricks, and it's even got the markings of the company that made the bricks that were here, and he presented that to me. It's heavy. I'm glad I drove up here. I don't think I could ever get it through baggage claim, but that's really touching. And that's not one of our company, Speedway Motorsports' racetracks. So to be honored up here like that, that's quite a feat. I could not have imagined 30 years ago something like that happening to me.
Well, I know you're a bit of a historian in a few different aspects, certainly when it comes to motorsports and this industry that you have been a part of for many, many years and are now going to be stepping away from. But that, I mean, typically when somebody says, well, I'm going to give you a 116-year-old brick, you're like, okay, sure. It's got a nice paperweight. But that is amazing when you think about the history and the people that potentially raced on that brick that is now in your possession.
Yeah, it's very cool. And, you know, this is the oldest speedway in America and one of the grandest. And to have a little piece of memorabilia from this original speedway racing surface, that's really special. And I thank Doug Bowles and Indy and all the folks at the Indianapolis Radio Network. I know we just talked about them a lot, but that's really special. We get a little break from NASCAR, Alexis. Our jobs are going to get a little tougher here the next couple of weeks.
We do. 2-week break for the Olympics. If anybody's interested in tuning into that, it's going to be on NBC. I think a huge break for these teams and these drivers who have been grinding it out for the past several months. And then, you know, once that's over, it's going to go by in a flash. Once it's over, 4 races to determine who's going to be in the playoffs.
And that's still wide open. We didn't add a new winner today, so there's still 4 spots open to get in on points. I want to thank our gracious host here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, where we are recording this broadcast, and also Holly Kane from the NASCAR Wire Service for dropping by, and our very own Brett McMillan for dropping in and being a part of the show. Of course, Harold, Kent Bernhardt, Alexis Erickson. I'm Doug Rice. We'll be back next week. You know what? We'll have a whole bunch more Fast Talk.
Fast Talk was presented by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. and Sunoco. Whether you're heading to the track or just hitting the road, fill up with Sunoco UltraTech. This is PRN, the Performance Racing Network.